Well, friends, it's a grace hour time again. This is a Christian podcast coming to you from Baltimore. And we hope that you are doing well today. And we want to thank you for being a part of our podcast. And we invite you to make comment there if you can. I'm Pastor Steve Andrelonis with Greater Grace Church. And with me is Philippe Siragi. We're talking this week about not being forgotten. Maybe you feel forgotten every now and then. It's easy to feel forgotten. Someone slights you, and you wonder if anyone even realizes that you are in the room or alive. But we are talking about these things. We want to talk about these things from biblical point of view, Christian point of view, a Bible point of view. Want to give you some practical understanding about it. But our task today, what we've been assigned, is to talk about suffering. And in the midst of suffering, that's probably the moment when you most feel forgotten, correct? Is that what we could say? That we most feel forgotten in our pain?
I mean, that's how our theme today relates to the theme of the week, right?
I think so, yes. Yeah. That's what they're asking us to talk about.
I think so. I mean, we could double check with the boss over here because I guess so. You know, yeah. I mean, the boss is engineering.
He had some details to cover anyway, so we'll just let him go.
My point is that we rarely have the big boss in the studio, so we got to behave today.
Do the right thing.
We're going to
talk about the right thing.
And we're going to answer all the questions.
I don't know about that, but
we'll do whatever we can because I think your job and my job is on the line. So when the boss comes to inspect the show, then you better. Anyway, so we won't say why he's here because that would put Jehu, under the light. Jokes aside, I like the theme of the week because who doesn't feel forgotten by God sometimes? There's many reasons why we can end up this way. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like, I don't see answers to my prayers. I don't see my life circumstances changing. Maybe I'm going through financial difficulty, family difficulty. There's so many things we can look at. I hate my job. My car broke down, and I wonder why. And we'll talk about Job down the road a little bit. But I think the idea we can actually, and you made that connection earlier, I just want to underline that a little more, is that when we go through suffering times, trying times, or difficulties, we tend to naturally think that maybe God is not on with me. And it's so interesting that God has to repeat, I am with you all the time, because we forget it all the time. And there is two ways we can live our Christian life. And there's many ways we can express it. I'm going to give you two examples. One is we can talk about the vertical versus the horizontal, right? Mm-hmm. So our horizontal, it's this life. You and I live this way and we don't think with God. Or there's the vertical, right? And God comes in and he gives us his thoughts, and we have that through the revelation of Scripture. The other way, which is very famous in Greater Grace, is Pastor Schaller's way of building a house with two floors on his famous drawings. If you go to church here, or if you see him on high, you know what we're talking about. Well, the first floor is the natural life, and the second floor is the spiritual life. Yeah. Now, Pastor Schaller, in his messages, I think sometimes he's been misunderstood to think it's either or floor. He's saying, no, it's either the first floor only or it's the whole house, which is both floors.
Yeah.
Because when
floors,
we, yes.
Two floors.
Yeah. Right. If I lose someone dear, I'm going through some very difficult time, I'm not jumping on the second floor thinking and denying reality.
Yeah.
That would be psychotic.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. So you can't. That would be hyper spiritual. But I do have my foot on the ground, but can my thoughts be with him? Mm-hmm. Can I think the thoughts of God after him,
Yeah.
And that's the verse 11 in Isaiah 55, 8 through 10, my thoughts are not your thoughts, my ways are not your ways, but my word will not return to me void. Mm. Meaning when my thoughts are not his thoughts, but he sends his thoughts, they come back with a result. So I'm saying all this to say something simple. When our lives is first floor related only, when our lives are strictly horizontal, then we can easily look at our circumstances and interpret those circumstances as being God chastising me, forgetting me, being busy somewhere else. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. We can easily misinterpret our trials, difficulties as one proof quote unquote, that God has forgotten me, right?
I think so. I think so. We are, I think one of the things that we want to express to people is that when you entertain this idea that God has somehow left you on your own and forsaken you, even though the promise of the Bible is that he will never leave you nor forsake you.
Yes.
Says it to Joshua, who's transitioning into being a leader after Moses' death. And then we see it also mentioned in Hebrews at the end there. God will never leave you. Be content in whatsoever you have. And then God will never, no, never, no, never leave you nor forsake you. We know that this is a thing. I think the thing we want to try and help people understand is a way to escape falling into the depth of bitterness.
Yes.
You know? And I think when we're trying to answer, we try to give, like you said, we try to give like first floor level answers. Mm-hmm. Like that was the whole point. We want to get into the story of Job, which is really, you know, among the oldest books of the Bible, oldest, you know, was one of the first stories and writings that came to be recognized by the people of God and to be talked about by the people of God. And we see that if we live just on the first floor, we know that the friends of Job, they were fine when they were quiet. Mm-hmm. Maybe they should have shut up and stayed quiet.
Yeah.
But when they started to try and explain
yes.
the reason for the suffering, all of them really talked about, you know, about Job not measuring up.
Yes.
Not doing what God required.
Yes.
And that is, you know, that is a recipe for bitterness. I did, you know, because when you look at it, you know, Job is a person that we read about. God says, you know, there's no one like him. He eschews evil. He prays for his children.
Yes.
You know, all of this is regular. And, you know, Satan is like, no, you've got him. You got a nice little wall around him. Mm-hmm. If you take that wall down, he's going to certainly fall into curse you to his face. Yes. That's what he says. He's going to curse you to your face.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. He will curse God to his face. That's what, that's the way Satan viewed the relationship between Job and God. And so, I mean, I think when we use that word, like we can be very casual saying, you know, we probably said it, you know, there's a purpose in all things.
Yes.
But someone who's grieving.
Yeah.
They can't see that at that moment,
no.
right? And so we want to be very absolutely. Careful not to like say that, like, oh, there's a purpose. God is in all things. That's true.
Yeah.
But is it to be said?
Is it to be said, or so what do we mean by that? Because if I say God is in it, am I saying God provoked this? You know, or is God in it in the sense, don't worry, has, because there's two ways we can see this. Right. And there's two. One is God is in it because he thinks I need a spanking. And since I was deaf to the first spanking, he's going to spank me louder. Like God's, he's so limited, like human parents, that if my education system doesn't work, I'm going to make it worse. Like God, he's like us. You know, he will use human solutions for human problems. So that's not what it is. Suffering is not God's. Putting up the thermostat, say, oh, you think you can play this game with me? I'll show you who's boss. Mm. That would be you and I as human beings being tempted to make a statement.
Yeah.
God is not like this, completely independent from those emotional, irrational ideas. But what we mean by that, when I say God is in it, and I can say it with hindsight, because I didn't like it when I went through difficulties, but now I'm with hindsight, I'm thinking, God wasn't in it in the same way that Joseph told his brothers, you meant it for evil, God meant it for good. Meaning that and we see that with Job as you reference him. The reason why Job is in his predicament is because the devil brought on, God gave him, okay, you want to go and test him? Go ahead and test him. But he gave him some
parameters
in which he could operate. But the ideas of what happened to Job didn't come from God.
No.
They came from the devil. So, of course, we may not like the idea anyway. Why would God allow this? And then we'll talk about this. And you see at the end, Job himself, who is the most capable of speaking about the because I could, you know, I could say something, well, I don't like the idea. Well, at the end, Job did like the idea. Mm-hmm. So he's more capable than you and I to talking about his own circumstances. But I think what you're right. What we can say is thinking like a prescription. Here I am, Dr. Ho, you're going through grief. Yes, listen, Proverb, give you three verses. Here you go. You read those three times a day, you'll be fine in a week. Like it's a prescription for antibiotics. So it's not true. It can't be this way. We need love, compassion, understanding, and also realizing that unless God reaches out, you know, to us in our sufferings, we can't understand them for what they are. It's impossible. You know, it has to be a work of God. It has to be a work of the Holy Spirit. We can be friends. We can help. We can have compassion. The Bible does say we should, and we're there available. But at some point, you and I, everybody will have to understand whatever I'm going through, I have to deal with this in my heart before God. That's the only way that I can really understand, right? Because God granted Job his meeting, but before he asked him, he allowed him to speak, he asked him a few questions. And that's I'm going all over the place. But
well, I think in the one of the big verses that we miss, maybe, toward the end of Job, as he said, I have nothing to say anymore.
Yes.
It's like Job was not interested in rehearsing either the conversation with God or all that he went through to get to that conversation. He just said, I know two things now. Once I knew God this way, now I see him in a different way.
Yeah.
And, you know, God restored him, his prosperity, but spiritually there is an expansion that happened.
Yes.
And it's very easy for us sitting here, not knowing what certain people are going through, to say, this is a purpose of God.
Yes.
You're going to see a great expansion. And in Psalm 105, it says that Joseph was tried by the word. He did not see the place that he would land, the position of authority he would have, the mission he would have to save a region ravaged by famine as it was affecting his family. None of those things were revealed to him. Just like none of this detail was revealed to Job during the course of his conversation. And, but that's the thing, like how much, you know, Job said, I lay my hand on my mouth, and that's, here I am now.
Yes.
I'm going forward with this. I have gotten through to God. He has met me, and his words do not sound like what we say. I don't, you know, when God is like asking the 80 some questions, it's like, it doesn't seem to be like, is that in the counseling handbook on counseling someone going through something very tragic? Is that, you know, we would say, why is this the way that you deal with your suffering servant?
Yes.
You know, it's like, we have a lot of questions, and I think it is, you know, God leaves those things sort of open-ended for us so that we are drawing near to him. You know, we could juxtaposition the story of Jonah, who did not handle his situation at all the way that Job handled it, right?
Yes.
How did Jonah handle it?
Yeah, well, not the way that Job handled it, for sure. Which is funny because also Jonah, and I think we made that point a couple times already, like in past shows, but he's the most successful of all the prophets.
He is. Won a whole city to God reluctantly.
Who else did that as a prophet in the Bible? None of them.
Not even Isaiah, the disciples did, I mean, when they preached.
I mean, in the Old Testament,
but after they had the Holy Spirit, this is before. Yeah,
yes.
Right.
So what do we have? Isaiah, the greatest prophet of all, you know, he didn't do anything. And at the end of his ministry, Israel was deported.
Yeah.
Jeremiah did not succeed.
Watched everything fall apart.
So, and Jonah, he was like completely reluctant, and he ends up, you know, so I think it takes us to another part maybe of thinking in a way, questioning God, because I want to go back to what we said earlier about the idea of like, there's the only way for us to really understand is for us to humble ourselves before God and accept that God is sovereign, accept that God has all the best intentions. And the idea is, because you were asking, you know, is can we take God's questioning of Job's capacity to address him as one way to model our counseling sessions? The answer is no. And I'm telling you why I think it's the case, because I think God can do this.
God can do that. We cannot. Okay. Like, I got it.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm there.
If I come to you, right? And, yeah. and I would have, I know you and then you have a lot of experience. You're going to give me some good counsel. I know that.
Yeah.
But there's some things you wouldn't be able to say without me reacting. If God sits here, he comes with his presence.
Yeah.
He doesn't just come with a degree or, you know, or I've been around for 30 years. I think that's what makes the whole difference. I think Job was capable of receiving all these questions that puts him back in his place despite his suffering, because he was in the presence of God. And that stresses out for me the importance of realizing as pastors or leaders, or even more so as counselors, not creating a dependency on your ministry for the disciples that God sends your way. Because if you do, then I think you're not, you're putting yourself like the three friends, actually all the friends, even Eliu, the three first friends of Job was completely inadequate.
Yeah.
And Eliu was insufficient. That's the difference for me. The first three guys, you don't know what you're talking about. And the fourth guy, you know a little bit what you're talking about, but you don't.
Yeah, he's...
But you do more than the others, but you don't. Because at the end, Job is the one that had to pray for all of them. But what I like about this, if we go back a little bit, I think... So we know at the end, in Job 42, that he says to God, my ears have heard about you, my eyes have seen you. Just by God putting him back into his place, but with his presence, he was able to realize who he's dealing with in a good way. Not that I'm afraid. This is not King Jong-un who's going to put me in the camp somewhere in the north, or you know a dictator who's going to put me in some camp in Siberia, whatever. But this is God we're talking about. So he humbled himself. But when you go back to the beginning of the story and you mentioned that, I think was interesting. Job was, and I like to use when you have insurance, what you're looking at is how much your insurance covers, and so what's your deductible, right?
Yeah,
so
that's true. So how much you're going to get hit?
Out of pocket. That's a big question.
Yeah.
So I think for me, it's like Job was not wrong when he defended his integrity, but he was wrong when he understood what the heart of God, because his point was very much like a legalist would in some sense. He's going to cover everything with the minimum deductible. Uh-huh. And so I'm doing sacrifices, and then I'm going to do sacrifices for my kids just in case. That's the extra payment I make every month, so my deductible is down to zero. Yeah. And then he wonders, what the heck? You're not paying for this? You know, he calls his insurance, you're not covering this?
Yeah.
No, because this is not part of the contract. And I think the problem that we make sometimes, and that's why it's hard for me personally to understand my suffering is when I go through, because obviously all of us do, is I am crossing my arm. I thought we had a deal. And God says, no, you had a deal. And I think Job had a deal with God that God never signed off on. Yeah. And now he realizes who he's dealing with.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't make a deal with God. You know, and then I think that's the idea. Then so now that's where God is so sovereignly amazing. He's at the end, who wins? Everybody, even Job, but the devil.
Yeah.
That's the end of it. So that's why was Job forgotten? He wondered.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked for an audience. He got it.
Yeah.
Didn't have a chance to place one word in the conversation. Yeah. But then his heart was transformed and changed. Yeah. And that's what I think. This is one great example of what can God do with suffering in our lives, right?
Yeah. 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 I think that, everyone at the end there, we see that Job... he has a relationship with God that's different.
Yes.
We see that Job prays and his friends are brought into a different kind of relationship with God. You know,
yes,
that's the way I'm reading it. I don't get any explanation there, but I'm thinking that these also, Job learned God in a new and expanded way. And then his friends who were living in the accusation principle,
yes,
which is really from the side of hell, accusing, and, they also got prayed for by Job. So they learned something in the whole situation. So, living in the purpose, trying to see a purpose behind it, trying to see purpose about suffering and seeing what Job was brought to is important, trying to understand that.
Yes.
And
we interrupt this show for a commercial.
Yeah,
The commercial is Jehu. He's back in the studio.
Thought
he was going to make a quiet entrance, but it was perfect timing because we're done with one point and we're moving on.
We're moving on. I think we're moving on. I'm just let's see what
Jehu.
Back to the idea of suffering and
yes,
not seeing ourselves as forgotten.
Yes.
You know, so we have Job. I think the person that really, like when we look in the Bible, really is the most important lesson for us, or the most important personality for us to watch is Jeremiah.
Yes.
Because when we think of, like, we talked about Jonah, I talked about that, I introduced that, and then we have Jeremiah, we see that, you're right, it's really kind of interesting. I never even thought about it. That's a new thing when you think about it. Like, none of these prophets was successful in bringing, you know, there was a remnant
yes,
that grieved. We know from Ezekiel, there yes, was a remnant that grieved over the idolatry that was going on, and they grieved. They wanted a deeper relationship with God. You know, we know that that was, but we don't see like a mass, like, you know, maybe during the days of Josiah, when he tore his garments and yes, he instituted sort of some of like a surface revival, but it didn't take
yes,
into their hearts.
Yes.
But here we see Jonah goes to a heathen city, Nineveh, the Assyrian city, mm-hmm, a cruel city, mm-hmm, you know, that he did not want to see get the mercy of God, yes, but they did get the mercy of God. It's really kind of interesting that that's what happened. But I digress, I think. But, you know, the relationship with God, I mean, one of the questions that's posed to us here is like the goodness of God in the midst of suffering. And when we do feel forgotten by God. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. I was like thinking, I just finished reading the end of Matthew, and in that passage, in the Matthew gospel account of the Passion, we know that Jesus was suffering much. He had been flogged. He's on his way to the cross. You know how much strength he has. We know that he has been beaten, beyond recognition, maybe human recognition. But he is given sort of a drug. They mix something in there, and when he tastes it, he refuses mm-hmm, to drink what they gave him. He didn't want to numb the pain.
Yes.
I wonder what you're thinking about this. This seems, if we take suffering yeah, out of the world of the Bible and church life, Christian living, mm-hmm, and we see that there is a scientific method to dealing with people's hurts, yes, despair, discouragement, melancholy, all of these things, depression, even. We know that there's this, it seems that there is a chemical, trying to create a chemical construct being right? Mm-hmm. Being comfortable. Mm-hmm. I think that.
Yes.
You know, like, how do we get, I think, is that what we want? Like, is the purpose of our life to be comfortable?
Yeah, no, it's not. Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, okay, so let me rephrase. Could my life be always comfortable? Yes. Will my life always be comfortable? There's 8 billion people out there. There's always someone who's going to rub me the wrong way, say something I don't like, put me in an awkward position, or I would do the same for other people. So, but what's interesting, and I'm going to say something, I'm working on thin ice with this
one. I'm here with you.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm here with you.
As a non-American.
I won't throw you under the bus. Go ahead.
Thank you. All right. So as a non-American, what's, I think, shocking for people from other countries is the idea that in American mindset is that comfort is number one. You know, like, you have a brand of furniture called Lazy Boy, right? That would never work in Europe. And because...
True.
Because okay, first, people would never want to buy that thing. Is, I'm not lazy. I'm not sitting in that
You're
stuff.
You're not making that testimony with your purchase. Yes. You're not going to spend your money to tell people you want to kick back and watch the tubes. Yes. Okay, go
that's
ahead.
That's the commercials, I gotcha, actually. Yeah, we deserve this. That's the second thing that I find interesting in the culture, is the word deserve.
deserve.
You deserve this. You know, we get, you know, maybe some people are hardworking. Do I deserve to sit back and relax one day a week because I'm super busy in my life. I get that. And one thing I do like about the American culture is that most Americans I know are very hard workers. Mm-hmm. And that's the good thing about this. And then the third point is pain should not exist. And it's interesting. So I grew up in France. Where you go to the dentist once or twice a year, you know, so like for checkups and stuff.
Yeah.
So every time I went to the dentist in France, I hated it. Man, what did he do? You know, it was mm-hmm. just a cleanup. Well, you know, if I go to the dentist here, I won't. Yeah, are you done? I don't know. I don't feel anything. If I had to get some work done, I don't even feel it. Mm. And my dentist is super sorry because he's got to put some small needle into your gum so you won't feel anything. You barely feel the stinch.
Yeah, just a pinch. Here it comes. Yeah,
he's super sorry about this. He's like, I hope you're okay. You know, he's like, what am I, made of sugar? You know, but the point is I'm going somewhere with this.
Okay.
And now look at this, like for example, look at pain. So we deal with pain differently in my home country versus here. In France, your painkillers you have are the same that you find over the counter, right? Any prescription that is powerful can only be administered into the hospital. You can get opioids.
Mail it to you. And they don't send it out the door. No.
And if you have to stay in the hospital for 3 or 4 days because of the back pain, when you get home, you have to deal with it. Mm. You know, but the point being is I'm talking about the comfort. And what did it bring? One of the most important addiction crises in the US in the last 20 years is based because out of opioids.
Yeah.
People get addicted because of this. So I think the word addicted in that way comes with the idea of comfort. I shouldn't be in pain. Mm-hmm. Yes, you've been sliced open. Mm-hmm. It's going to take you a week before your pain ease. Just bear with this. Just, you know, I need to be up and functional. Yeah, I got stuff to do. Or so we want our cake and we want to eat it at the same time. Yeah. So what I'm thinking is, in his great wisdom, I don't know why God decided that pain would be a part of our lives. I don't know. I can't wrap my mind around this. But because I know who he is, and the Bible clearly says God is, you know, God is omniscient, he's omnipotent, he could do anything. And we go back to the idea we raised a couple times, you know, like this is the best of all possible worlds about, you know, from when we hear from some of the philosophers, the Christian philosophers, in the sense that God in his wisdom decided that pain would be the one thing that stops us in our track. Because if I'm running towards hell, mm-hmm. if God chopped both my legs off and I turn to him and I go to heaven without those two legs for the rest of my life, but I go to heaven, this is better than me running with my two legs going to hell. Yeah. That's one perspective we don't have. It's just like with Job, as we were saying, God sees something that's going to make a huge difference in Job's life and in our lives because the Bible has been written for our instructions. Now, with hindsight, I'm learning things about Job's life that he couldn't know at the time, but I can know for my life. So all these to answer the question about comfort. I think, yes, we could. I can pray for comfort. You know, I can pray for, you know, like I have a good friend of mine who died when he's in his 40s. We were very close. He died of cancer. I went to visit several times in the hospital, and then he decided to die at home. It was cancer is very painful, you know. Yeah. So he was in and out, and when you're at home, hospice at home, and you have nurses or doctors, whatever, they come and they administer that what they could administer in the hospital, but you cannot take it yourself. They have to administer it, those chemicals. But then you pray for comfort at this time. You pray for, you know, in that way. So I understand that as well. You know, that is something that it's hard. Why is some of our diseases so painful? I don't have the answer. Mm-hmm. I really don't.
No.
And why do God allow things to happen in my life? I don't. Some of it I can understand. Why would someone be angry and beat up somebody else? Because they have to have the free will to do whatever they want, and there is consequences to our decisions. But then I don't have to have all the answers. And then we go back to what we said earlier. If I think that I look at my life and the circumstances, God has forgotten me, I need to have a relationship with God And that's what will solve my problem of perspective and also understanding. Like, there's no one can solve my thinking but God. Mm. In that particular, theme, I think.
Well, let's think this way, maybe. You opened the door earlier with the Pastor Schaller drawing, first floor, second floor. And I think that a lot of, the first floor thinking, we try to, like you said, bring comfort, take the edge off the pain.
Yes.
I like what you said there about we deserve this. It's like we've worked so hard, we deserve this. And really that's sort of contrary to what the depravity of man has brought.
Yes.
I think, when we think about why there is suffering, it's like the capacity that we were made for in the image of God, if it was kept in its rightful position under God's authority and accumulating the glory and the relationship that God intended for man to have with him, then that's a difference. But when man chose to, to take authority upon himself, then the idea of like limitation is a mercy. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a mercy. We don't see it as a mercy.
Yes.
But it is, because like you said, like if you're running headlong to a cliff and that cliff is going to pitch you into eternal hell and you get your legs cut off, then all of a sudden God has your attention.
Yes.
And we don't, the thing is, if you still live on the floor, the natural floor, the first floor, the horizontal level, and don't look up, if you don't see the ladder that God lowered to Jacob, then you don't get the sense of what God is trying to bring you to.
Yes.
And that is not a very easy thing to receive. I admit that. We can say this very casually, not living in maybe, you and I are not living in a lot of pain right now, to someone in a great deal of pain, emotional, relational or physical, for us to say, you just need to look up and see the ladder that God has lowered. And that's a very, I can say that, but you having the capacity to do that, that's part of what the body of Christ exists for, is to help you in that. And it's part of what the Bible gives you is like these stories. And I'm thinking I'm going to be teaching in Dundalk tonight on Mark 13. Okay. And this is like the Olivet Discourse. Jesus is saying there's going to be troubles, famines, plagues, roars, rumors of wars, family divisions, family feuds, fierceness. You are going to be taken before kings and rulers. And, you're going to have to listen to the Holy Spirit to say what you're going to have to say. But through it all, he's saying, watch and pray, I am with you. Watch and pray, I am with you. I'm coming. It's going to be like I'm on a long journey. You're going to wonder why I'm not coming back sooner.
Yeah.
And I wish I could tell you when I'm coming back, but the fact is that I'm Jesus and I'm the Son, but I don't know. Yes. I can't tell you because the Father has kept it in his own realm of information. So, I think that that's like he's saying these things to his followers that, I am with you. And he says it when he leaves, lo, I am with you always. And I can say those things very easily when I'm not in pain.
Yes.
Just like Paul saying, I beseeched God three times. Yes. I had a thorn in the flesh. We don't know what it is. And I think that's the grace of God and the wisdom of God not to tell you exactly what it is, because if it was just a physical ailment, then we would say, well, Paul had to deal with bad eyesight. Some people say it. If it was just like a relational ailment, like, Paul's family turned against him, and because he was a Pharisee of the Pharisees, or if it was like, Paul planted churches and people didn't follow God, that's, what kind of thorns? There's a lot of thorns there. Yeah. Anything was thorny, but, the answer he got from God was, my grace is sufficient. Mm. And, you might have to say that again and again, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think, I think if you look at the pendulum of how we can help each other or help ourselves in difficult times, on one end, we dismiss this by, oh, this is not spiritual. I want to confess the truth. And I only, that's hyper-spiritual. On the other hand is, I can't hear anything from God right now. I'm so angry, which I understand as well. So can we question God? When you lose, particularly when you lose somebody dear to you, like a big part of your life, like a spouse, a child, or then you always
or
wonder,
your best friend,
or your best friend,
yes, right,
and then you go back in the middle, yes, There is another way. We see that in the Bibles. We also see that, you know, I have, you know, from Atlanta, a friend of mine, I've known him for 30 years, and he and his wife were, it's going to be PG-13. So him and his wife went out to dinner. Their daughter stayed at home, you know, and there was a burglar in the house. She was 15 years old. And they were roaming through the house, and then they found her and they raped her. And so the guy got caught. He went to jail, and she was traumatized for a long time. And the father, who is also a pastor, you know, that's, you would say, wow, that shouldn't, wait, it happened to a Christian. This is, you know, he wrote a book about it. You know, his name is Ron Herod. And when we were talking, you know, when he explained it, because he wrote something in his book, and he said that God put him on his heart to go to the jail and forgive the rapist. And with the blessing from his daughter, right? So for me, I'm thinking, I don't know if I would be able to do that. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of extreme, you know? Mm-hmm. But then to me, what it showed me is that some that's also okay. I don't understand it. Many of us don't understand it. Why would you do that? But it's that also okay. Can God put this on his heart? You know, and God did put it on his heart.
Yeah.
And that changes ministry in so many ways. And I think what I mean by this is sometimes we're opposing our understanding and response from the sufferings we have, because we stand from extreme positions. And God is saying, can you trust me in this?
Yeah.
Well, I yes and no. Okay, that's a good start. Just like Peter, you know, do you love me, Agape? No, I love you, Phileo. And then at the end, he says, okay, do you love me, Phileo? Yes, I do. Okay, well, we can start from here. I think God understands what's in our hearts. Can I blame God for my circumstances? Yes, God understands. And then once my emotions pass, God is still interested in reaching out to me. He still wants me to hear him. He still wants me to hear, to speak to him. And that's what we're talking about. So our sufferings, as C.S. Lewis puts it, they're this megaphone that God uses to arouse a deaf world. That does not mean that God doesn't have, you know, like that's his first response. Oh, okay, oh, you want to play the hard, you know, the hard way. I'm going to play hard with you. This is not how God motivates his decisions. But then if I go through something, then I can't dismiss the love of God. I cannot dismiss the fact that God is with me. And if I think that God has forgotten me, then I'm in the wrong. He hasn't. I can feel that he has, but he hasn't. It's not possible, you know, because God made us a promise. So the process I will have to go through in that, you know, and then we all have at some point, you know, and then it's, I have to leave my thoughts to receive his thoughts. That's all I need. Yeah. Right. That's all I need.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty interesting story there. I'm just thinking, like, because some would say, well, how do I say this carefully? I'm just reading this book by Brad Hambrick on forgiveness. Now, Brad is from North Carolina. He's going to be here in a couple of weeks at our church. And he's a counseling pastor at a church in North Carolina. And he wrote this book on forgiveness. And he's talking about the stages of, like, you know, someone hurts you, rebuilding, if you want to rebuild the relationship with them, the patterns that go through it. And then he makes this really, I'm not quoting it exactly, but he makes this statement, you know, like you're saying, like this, you know, some would see this pastor and the daughter and the process that they went to release this man in their own hearts.
Yes.
You know, and now I'm not saying that they probably still remembered the pain.
Yes.
And they had to forgive him all over again, different situations, but they went and expressed this forgiveness. And one of the things that Brad Hambrick points out in this, like, can you get to the place where you can accept that someone who hurt you is actually getting mercy from God?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can forgive them, but can you graduate, or can you come to a situation where you're not offended by the fact that their life has some measure of blessing after they have hurt you and you have forgiven them? He's talking about this process, getting to that place, and it's not an easy place to get to.
Yes.
And, you know, the kind of thing like justice must be served at all costs. And once justice is served, you know, what does it mean, you know, for you? Like, once you see justice served, you know, someone has hurt you, like this man saw this pastor and this daughter saw this man go to jail. And then in their hearts, they were able to, you know, to be able to be released, to forgive. It was the power of the Spirit to do it.
Yeah. I think the justice being served was a kind of a closure in the process. And I think he says in his book that they helped the family start the process of forgiveness. So there's room for that. And I think when you quote Brad Hembrick, I'm excited about his coming. He's, you know, he'll be there, I think, 8th or 9th or 9th and 10th, I remember, of June. But it's going to be a great, we talked with him a few times, you know, he's... And he's also showing in the relationship between Matthew 18 and Romans 13. I think he's going to do a session on that, if I recall what he wanted to do, which is on the one side, you have the church discipline and how we process things spiritually. The other one is we trust the government who has the sword to be able to make the right decisions when it comes down to civil affairs and criminal affairs. And I'm excited to hear about this. He's thinking about the process. So that's going to be a good time. And we're not saying anything easy. Like we're not saying, well, you know, Steve Andrelini, St. Philip Saraji has all the answers. And we understand that suffering is very difficult to process. And we all went through it. You know, if I was thinking when you were talking, if I were to summarize my 17 first years of my life, I've learned more in those 17 first years of my life with what happened to me. Things you shouldn't happen until you shouldn't learn until you're an adult. So yes, I did go through a lot of things in my life. I really did. And on the other hand, I'm looking back and thinking God took me out of that, and God, a lot of what I've learned for those years is helping me today and helping other people. And I realized this is with 30 years, 35 years down the road, this is a blessing for me. I couldn't think of a blessing at the time, but it is a blessing. You know, now I'm thinking I'm now. I'm sure I've spoken to so many people, you know, and I've maybe counseled so many people, and some of them would tell you, well, you know, you're not such a great counselor, which is very possible. I'm sure some people are disappointed with my advice. So, and I think it's, yes, because...
Mine too, I'm going to say.
Yeah, and I've been told that not too long ago, actually. And I'm laughing at myself because I'm thinking, yeah, you got a point there. You know, that was a stupid idea, but not an idea, but it was not... adequate, you know, as a counsel, and I totally understand that. I think if we stay humble before God, or if we get humbled by the people we're serving, and sometimes as we're accountable, then we can grow and learn. I think it's also very valuable. That's besides the point. The point is, I think God mysteriously decided to use frail human beings to minister in His church, and that's. Even though it doesn't sound like the best decision, it was a wise decision from God. He decided to do it this way. So we got a lot of comments today.
I don't know that.
We have one question for you. I think, you know, when you said Jesus was given a drug when he refused, and you
This is not the hyssop moment when Jesus said, "I thirst." This was like yes, it was mixed with vinegar, but it was a drink. So when Jesus said, "I thirst," and they lifted that up, he took that, but he would not drink the gall when he came unto Golgotha.
Yes.
And I think this was like sort of like a soldierly thing, like because this was the most painful death. And I think they tried to give everybody who went on the cross something to sort of calm their pain for just a moment.
Yeah.
And it was a narcotic, and Jesus tasted it, and he didn't want to, he wanted to suffer the full measure of the suffering that he had to have there. So, that's it. You can find that Matthew 27.
Yes.
You can find that place where he got to the skull. They tried to give him something mingled with gall. He tasted it. He would not drink it. But then when he said, "I thirst," he did get the vinegar and he took it. And then he said, "It is finished." So there's two different situations there.
Yeah.
So that's the answer to that question. Yeah. Lastly, cause we're done here.
Yeah. We're done.
We've gotten through it. And even though, you know, we started suffering, wondering who was going to get us through this program, but two men answered today. Yes. So that's amazing. I'm sorry. I don't want to digress. I mean, I would say we want to be very careful not to tell you that promises are not prescriptions. Like we were asked here, how does the promises of God, like, can you take so many promises of God and suddenly you're comforted in your feelings of forgetfulness, being feeling like you are forgotten and forsaken by God. I don't think that's a good prescription, right? No, like you said, like that would be bad counsel.
Yes.
And we can't just say, just recite and chant. That's like vain repetition. You know, everything is designed to get us in contact with God. I think the thing we have to remember, God takes no pleasure in the death of any wicked person. So you have to come to grips with that. God is not willing that any should perish, but all should come to repentance. Mm-hmm. He's not slack concerning his promise. You know, this is, you know, why doesn't God answer? And why doesn't God bring comfort? Why don't I have peace sometimes? Mm-hmm. These are all big questions. And Job had to wrestle with them. And at the end of, you know, there's a story there. Joseph had to wrestle with them. Jeremiah had to wrestle with them. Sing your sad songs. Mm-hmm. If God's given you sad songs, and I could say, sing those to the atmosphere. There's a lot of laments in the Psalms.
Yes.
There's no easy answer. We're not here to give prescriptions. Suffering is a real thing. We do feel forgotten. I have felt forgotten by God, but he's brought me through it. That's all I can say. Yeah. How about you?
I think so. There's so many. So thanks, Elizabeth, Felix, Oretta, Madeline. You know, we didn't have time to read your comments today, but they were very defining. So if you follow on Facebook or YouTube, you can see those.
Yeah.
But I think I said what I had to say. You said what you had to say. I think we're done.
All right. So this has been the Grace Hour podcast. We want to thank you for being a part of this. If you missed any part of this, you can listen again. It's on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and gracehour.org is a place where all the programs are archived for you to listen to again. So it's a ministry. We are a ministry of Greater Grace Church in Baltimore. You can join us here at church tomorrow evening, 7:00, if you're looking for a place to fellowship in the middle of the week. Amen. Well, for Philippe Siragi, I'm Pastor Steve Androlonis. For Jehu Vandiver, who came in to guide us through.
Amen.
We want to thank him and thank all of you for being a part of the Grace Hour. Have a great Tuesday and a great rest of the week, everyone.